Time for a quick break to talk about McDonald's. Here's an offer you don't want to miss. For just $3, treat yourself to a Krispy Kreme donut, like their irresistible chocolate donut with sprinkles, and an any size hot coffee or refreshing iced tea. Just three. Whether you're fueling up for the day or just taking a sweet break, this deal is for you. Price and participation may vary. Offer valid December 10th through April 30th, 2025 at participating McDonald's while supplies last. Krispy Kreme and associated trademarks used under license. Copyright 2024 KKDC. Copyright 2024 McDonald's.
Tech Talk with Jess Kelly.
Thanks to Vodafone Business. With cybersecurity solutions from Vodafone, your business can hack off the hackers. See vodafone.ie/business.
This is News Talk.
Yeah, you're very welcome along to Tech Talk. This is Jess Kelly with you here on News Talk. Coming up over the next hour, we'll take a closer look at Rock. What is it and how does it compare to its rivals? We'll hear more about Air's new Wi-Fi solution. And as ever, I'll answer your tech questions. If you want to get in touch, you can do so right now. TechTalk@newstalk.com is the email address, or you'll find me on Instagram at JessKellyNT. The sun is finally out, and what a difference it makes. I've had a very fun, very different week here at News Talk. I was running the TY week, and you're going to hear from some of the students a little bit later on. But I want to start this week with Grok, because on Friday's Breakfast Business, I was in with Joe Lynham talking about DeepSeek, and I suppose we were wondering if the hype around DeepSeek was overblown, particularly when you look at the competitors that are in the market. Obviously, there's the big guys like OpenAI and Microsoft's Copilot, but what about Grok? Cillian Ginnity of News Talk is with me now. Cillian, how are you?
I'm great, Jess. How are you?
I'm very well. So as I mentioned there's an awful lot going on in the AI space. That's probably the understatement of 2025. And upon thinking about it, I've never really explored the world of Grok. Maybe I'm just allergic to that whole side of the internet, but I know it's something you've looked into a little bit. So for those who don't know, just give us a bit of the Grok backstory.
So Grok is Elon Musk's AI, for want of a better word. It's the one that you can use in Twitter, but most of its functionality has been locked behind the premium tick.
Okay,
so a lot of its existence.
Now, let's just remember that the premium side of things, this was one of the biggest changes that Elon Musk made, was taking away the blue tick from profiles that had been verified and sort of gatekeeping them for the people who pay for it. So this is part of that premium package. Not only do you get a little blue symbol to let people know you're deadly, you get access to Grok.
Yes, and now he has started to open it up a little bit now. Basically, as new Groks come, he is releasing the old ones for free. So Grok 3 is the latest version, so everybody can now use Grok 2. Do you know where Grok actually comes from?
No, go on.
It was from Stranger in a Strange Land, a 1961 sci-fi novel.
That's so befitting, okay.
And it basically is like, to fully understand somebody, it was to Grok. So that's the whole kind of thing that Elon is trying to claim this is going to be the smartest AI in the world, that it's not going to be woke, that it will get the truth no matter how politically incorrect. And he's put an awful lot of money into this. So he's actually doubled the power. So it went from 100,000 NVIDIA GPUs to 200,000 for Grok 3. So energy alone, that's a massive investment.
Yeah.
So when it came out, he said all these musky kind of things of, it's going to be so powerful, it's going to be this, it's going to be that. So he claims it's 10 times more powerful than the previous version. Now, for how most people use AI, mm-hmm. I don't think they're going to really particularly notice the difference, in terms of a lot of people use it as like a search engine, and it does have these kind of nice little features that you can tell it if you want to be more searching or if you want it to be a little bit more in depth.
Okay.
So it has like specific buttons, so you can kind of tell it, I want you to go in this direction, which is nice. It's functionality wise, it's good.
Okay.
It is also moving away from just being on Twitter or X. Mm. There will be an actual Grok website, but Ironically, it is currently only for Premium Plus members at the time of launch and until now, which is hilarious because one of the reasons why Elon Musk pulled away from OpenAI and ChatGPT was because, oh, it's for profit and we shouldn't be doing that. AI should be for everybody. So everybody, if you pay.
So Elon Musk saying one thing and doing another? Question mark? Wow.
Yeah.
But you mentioned the point there about the power of it, right? Mm. And I am fascinated by that because obviously I've played around with loads of different versions and offerings from this type of service. And I just wonder for the average, as you said there, for the average user, what does the power mean? Is it the speed time? Is it the databases it can crawl across? What exactly does that refer to?
It's more so the databases, so it can scour so much quicker and so much more, which is ideally that's a good thing. Now, one of the features that it does do for like on the user end of things that's really really nice, and I think Perplexity does it as well. Mm. I'm not sure. I don't think ChatGPT really does it. Is it'll actually tell you where it gets the information, so it'll come up with little icons.
Yeah.
Now, one of the issues on Grok 2 was it would also pull from X. So it would pull tweets and it would acknowledge where it was coming from. But X is not known for its validity. And one of the other things as well, there's an advisor called Dan Hendricks who works with XAI, which is the company behind it and just in between X and Elon Musk himself. And he has actually looked into how political leanings are represented in AI. Because both himself and Musk have basically accused the likes of ChatGPT of being woke.
Yes.
And he basically has somebody, he's hired somebody now to look at keeping AI from not being woke. So there is some kind of more questionable sites that would be brought in on some of these things. So like I have actually asked Grok, who is Elon Musk, did Elon Musk make a certain salute? What about his relationship with Trump? And it gives very middle ground answers. It doesn't commit to anything. It tells me where it's getting its information from, but it says, like, in conclusion, there's no definitive proof of Musk harboring racist beliefs, but there are numerous instances where his actions or comments can be perceived as being racially insensitive. So it's not overly protective of its creator, but it certainly doesn't put forward what many would consider to be the truth either. So it's in a weird middle ground, which would kind of put a question mark overall on any of its searching if you're using it beyond basic information. If you are trying to have this kind of little back and forth with it that you might with like a notebook LM and stuff where you're trying to like hash out ideas.
But that's concerning though, because like any conversation that I've had around this technology, and just a few weeks ago, we had Ronan Murphy of Smart Tech 247 on the program, and we were talking about, I suppose, the impact of bias, right? Mm. And for AI to be as impactful as we'd all, as tech fans, would like to think it could be, you do need to rid it of bias.
Yes.
And perhaps part of that is the removal of the wokeness, but surely part of that is also removing the notion of something being woke.
Yeah.
Do you get me? I think there's too many...
You can't be saying you're looking for the truth beyond the politically correct and saying you're against wokeness, because that's automatically currying one's favour with one side.
Yeah, it's coming from a point of view, and I think the whole point is to try and scrape away the points of views or the points of view and then just get the facts.
Yeah. And this is one of the general issues of Musk's AI platforms is what he came out saying that this is going to be the most powerful AI that anybody can use and can benchmark it against ChatGPT-4. And these were all behind closed doors and now behind paywall tests. So where does the truth actually lie in terms of its power? Is it actually as good as he's telling people? And are people going to be willing to spend the money to potentially be duped by it?
Yeah. And I suppose at a time when there's so much uncertainty and there's so much fear, and then we're also hearing that businesses who don't get on the AI train are going to be left behind, that the notion of sort of tying yourself, your brand, your business to a platform that does approach things from a certain vantage point, like that could be detrimental, right? It's all too new to have any long-term studies, but I just wonder, is Grok's anti-woke approach actually detrimental and taking from the incredible power and incredible technology that must be inside?
Well, it's definitely going to some degree limit the users that are going to go to it because of one of who is associated, but like, that's not saying that OpenAI is amazing either, and Sam Altman. So like, people can look beyond the creators, but when you're, as we said, when you're starting from a vantage point that may be questionable, it is going to deter people from doing it and putting it behind a paywall. Like Grok 2, when you use it, is fine. It is, I would normally use some of these as kind of like search engines.
Mm.
Grok 2, as it stands, and this would be the one that most people can just go and use now if they want, it's very, very limited in terms of power. See, it's not, you're not going to be getting to do these amazing computations, but it also doesn't have the voice tech that Grok is now bringing. Grok 3 is now bringing, I should say. But Musk is also promising all these... He says, check back in every day because we're constantly improving it. But it's just this classic overselling. And I don't... It just always opens up when people are tinkering under the hood of these things that, like, my user experience today could be very, very different to yours tomorrow.
Yeah.
And when you're using something like this, it's one of the reasons why Google has been such a monopoly for so long, is you know what you're going to get.
It does what it's meant to do, and exactly. Nothing more, nothing less, and that's it.
And anytime there's that kind of questionability, especially when it comes to businesses, like, you can't, if you can't rely on it, that you're not going to invest in it, you're not going to take the time to learn it. Now, saying that, we're now getting to a stage where there's so many options. Like DeepSeek is one, Perplexity is another. There's all the Google versions. Even the New York Times have now their own AI model that they're using. So like, we're getting to such a crowded field that I think people will be very, very easy to be left behind. And until you kind of have that recognizable names, ChatGPT is one of them, but there's still question marks over it. And again, kind of like what Musk said, but it being behind a paywall for the stronger versions, it's just very hard to see an opportunity for everyday businesses or everyday people to incorporate these in a way that's really meaningful. The way it's hard to see it in the next year really make the splash that Google Search and Google Images did back in 2004, 2005, 2006.
So I just wonder then, like, with the amount of plates that are spinning in the realm of Musk at the moment, do we think that Grok is going to be a long-standing contender and a serious contender, particularly in a market that is getting more saturated as the weeks go by?
Well, considering he was trying to buy OpenAI 3 months before announcing Grok 3, there's like there's an element of a child and their toy here. Now, it has a dedicated company, dedicated team. I'm sure they have put in some incredible work and hours to make this what it is. And who's to say that even if he does acquire a different company, that they're not just brought in under the one umbrella? But there's a lot of investment gone into the hardware of this.
Okay.
I don't think it's going to go away tomorrow. I don't think it's going to go away in a year. But when somebody's eye is already on the next company to buy, it puts a question mark over this version.
Okay. I'd love to know what you think. Have you played around with it? Is it worth paying the premium subscription for? You can email me, techtalk@newstalk.com. I haven't given it a go. I don't know if I'd give it a go. But again, your thoughts, please do send them in. For the moment, Cillian Ginnity, as always, thanks so much.
Thank you.
Tech Talk with Jess Kelly.
Yeah, you're very welcome back. Earlier in the week, Amazon announced a big update to Alexa. Panos Panay of Amazon was giving a bit of a rundown on what exactly those changes entail.
She's been trained in a couple of different ways, from EQ to humor to understanding. So what that means is she checks my tone. She brings a nice tone back. She understands I'm a little bit nervous. She's trying to calm me. It's kind of a great conversation. Also recognizes the environment around us.
So we're going to have a more empathetic Alexa. I'd love to know what you think. Do you like when the technology mimics or tries to emulate human emotion. You can let me know, techtalk@newstalk.com. Elsewhere this week, Air hosted a launch event for its new Wi-Fi 7 product. My colleague Joe Lynham went along to the launch and he spoke to Susan Brady, the Managing Director of Consumer and Small Business with Air.
The Wi-Fi 7 home hub, in connection with Wi-Fi 7 boosters, creating a mesh system within the home, is creating Air Wi-Fi. So if yesterday was Wi-Fi, today is all new Air Wi-Fi.
And does it get rid of the famous knot spots or black spots where you kind of little corners and nooks and crannies in the house where you can't reach?
Well, it does exactly that, Joe. So Air Wi-Fi is about providing seamless connectivity at super fast speeds everywhere in your home. So if you have recently renovated your attic space and you have a home office up there and you need super fast connection, this is the perfect product for you.
Granny flat?
Granny flat would be absolutely fantastic. And not only will you have amazing Wi-Fi out there, you can also have our incredible new Air TV powered by Android TV that also launched today.
And you're aiming for a much faster delivery speed. You're even talking about a 5 gigabit. Your rivals announced something similar last week. What can you do with 5 gigabits that you couldn't do with 1 or 2?
So today we actually launched 2 gig speeds. So that will be available from today on the Air network. And we have also announced that 5 gig speeds is coming in June. Now, for those early adopters who take up the Wi-Fi 7 product today, we will automatically upgrade those customers to 5 gigs. So in terms of the superiority of it, it will be a faster connection, but it's about getting that fast connection everywhere in your home, because 2 gigs or 5 gigs isn't really much use to you if you can only get it in 1 or 2 locations. You really want to try and get that speed everywhere in the home. And that is why you need Air Wi-Fi system. That's going to allow you to get those speeds, super fast upload and download speeds, an incredible latency attached with this product for gamers, and it's going to be in every corner of your home.
And you guys will send out any new kit that would be required. Any digging up the roads required for this new technology?
It is a new home hub, so the Wi-Fi 7 home hub will be brought into the home, and it will also then be added to, depending on the size of the home, with additional boosters. So as I said, one booster comes...
This thing called mesh or something.
Each booster works together to create a mesh network within the home. So to give that really superior, seamless connectivity throughout the home, you're creating this mesh within the home. So depending on the size of your home, you will need one, maybe sufficient, or you might need a second one.
And the pricing?
The pricing, it's an introductory, very special price point of $49.99 a month, and we've announced that today. So I think what we said was, be quick, because when it's gone, it's gone. So that price will only be available for maybe the first month. And then
After that,
it's likely that it will go up by €5. But today, we're really focused on getting those early adopters and those customers who are really looking for this product today. We've spoken to consumers. Consumers have told us that what they want is really fast, reliable connection in every corner of their home. So that is why we've launched Air Wi-Fi, so powered by Wi-Fi 7, to get that super fast connection everywhere in their home.
I've spoken to consumers as well, and they definitely want speeds, but you know what they want? They want to be able to reach the broadband provider. And if they want to change provider, they don't want it to be such a headache. For example, if you want to sign up for your new service, you could do it online, but you cannot cancel online.
So we would always urge our customers to contact us and ring us.
Some don't want to.
So customers who don't want to can absolutely deal with us through our social media channels. They can deal with us directly online. We have also launched a new Air app, which they can download. And
but you cannot cancel your services online.
We do have the ability for you to say that you want to cancel online, and then we will start the process for you.
Okay, so you can send, I don't know, via an email or something. I don't know whether there's an email address. So if you wish to not deal with someone from Air, that's possible.
So we would absolutely welcome our customers to deal with us on a digital-only basis. In fact, we have a digital-only brand where we both connect and disconnect customers through GOMO. So we're very comfortable and happy to deal with customers digitally across our website, across our social media channels, and of course through our brand new Air app.
So your rivals might be Sky, it might be Virgin Media. They're launching new products as well. Does that mean that you need to trim your profit margins as a result?
We're excited to be the first to launch Wi-Fi 7 to the Irish market. So we are the first and only. This is an absolutely exclusive product available only at Air today. I'm sure others may follow in the future, but right here, right now, we are the only ones offering this product.
And in terms of consumer complaints, I presume you're driving them downwards.
Our consumer complaints are at an all-time low. It's something that we have prioritised. We have made massive investments into customer care and our customer experience. We've spent €8 million in the last few years to drive down customer complaints and make the experience for customers as seamless and effortless as possible.
Yeah, that's Susan Brady of Air speaking to Joe Lynham. I have to say I'm intrigued by this because, as you'll hear later in the show, every single week I'm getting questions and emails and things from people asking about those black spots in their home. So hopefully I'll get my hands on one of these devices to test out and try and see if there are those black spots and if they can be eradicated. We have black spots not only with Wi-Fi in our house but also phone signal, and it is super frustrating. So that is an interesting development from Air. As you heard Joe mention there, Virgin Media also had a big launch the last week, I think it was. So again, it's good news for the consumer. There are more products, more solutions coming down the tracks. Now, at the beginning of the show, I mentioned that I had a bit of a different week this week, and that's because I spent 5 days with 12 transition year students. Every year, we here at Newstalk host the Learning Waves TY Media Week. So we invite students in to learn about radio production, but they don't just learn about it, they actually do it. So the 12 students came in, they learned how to book a guest, write a brief, put together a running order, carry out Vox Pops, edit it together. And I'm delighted to say that two of the students are with me now, Anna and Rosemary. So girls, you took part in the Learning Waves TY Media Week here at News Talk. And on Monday, I asked the question to the room, do you listen to radio? And very few hands went up in the room. So Anna, can you just tell me a little bit about your own media habits? Like, where do you get your news from? Or do you just listen to music? Do you just listen to podcasts? What's your take?
So like, my dad always watches the news like every night at 9. So like, it's always on. So, you know, I'd always hear it, and like in the car as well, like I'm always, the radio was always on. Like maybe I wouldn't put it on by choice, but it's always on. But like, it's so bad, but I think I always like would believe, like, you know, what I see on TikTok or like Instagram, you kind of just get your information from there and go with it. That's what I feel.
And what about you, Rosemary?
Yeah, to be quite honest, I don't really listen to the radio that often unless I'm in the car and someone else has turned it on. I suppose my parents do watch the news on like RTÉ or News Talk or some of that like throughout the day. Mm. But I wouldn't typically, I suppose, go looking for it, mm-hmm. you know.
And why did you want to take part in the TY Media Week?
I have a big interest. Like I've always, it's always kind of something I thought I wanted to do. Like there was a class in school, a media class, and we got a kind of taste of it and I really enjoyed it. And I think like I just enjoyed the interviewing people and the talking. I think it's like really freeing. I feel like it's like a nice job. Mm-hmm. And I did have an interest in it. So.
Mm-hmm. And what about you, Rosemary? Is this something that you'd be interested in doing when you leave school?
Well, I suppose I don't really know what I want to do when I leave school. But now after doing the week here, I'm kind of maybe leaning towards it a bit more now that you've seen everything that goes on behind the scenes, you know.
Mm. And did it surprise you to see, because just to give a bit of context for the people who weren't here with us this week, we came in with a blank sheet of paper on Monday morning, yeah. And you were told at 9 o'clock that by the end of the week, you'll have produced a 1 hour national radio show. Did you understand what went into making a radio programme?
No, I didn't realise all the research and producing that goes into it, like the sound and everything that goes behind the scenes. I didn't realise any of it until actually doing it myself, do you know?
Yeah, what about you, Anna?
Yeah, I'm the same. Like, I always knew that, like, you know, you see, you always just hear the one person talking, who they're interviewing. And, you know, you think, oh, yeah, there's a mic and whatever. But there's so much more. And it's so, like, more complicated, like researchers and everything. Like, there's so much more under the surface.
Mm-hmm. And has it changed your opinion of radio? Would you be more inclined to listen to radio now, having gained a bit of understanding as to what exactly goes into it all?
Yeah, I definitely think so, because it's kind of like, I guess, like respect or something. Like, you just, it's hard work put into it. And like, people want you to listen to it. So I guess like, it's kind of, and it's really good, like stuff that are put out. So why wouldn't you listen to it, you know?
Rosemary, what was the most fun bit of the week?
I'd say learn how to use the mics and the sound desk and kind of being able to control that yourself. Mm-hmm. You don't realise that someone does that behind the microphones.
Mm-hmm. And what about for you, Anna?
I really enjoyed the vox pops and like going up and asking people. Like, it was really, I found it nerve-wracking at the start, but I really enjoyed like the questioning people and getting to like hear other people's opinions on stuff.
And one thing that we talk about on this show quite a bit is the impact of social media on younger people. There's a lot of talk and a lot of focus on screen time and the impacts of the phones. Is that something that you'd be aware of?
Yeah, definitely. But I feel like it's becoming such a normalized thing. And like, everybody's different. Like, but I just feel like it's going to be here forever. So like, it's going to be a problem all the time.
Hmm.
But I don't necessarily think it's a bad thing. Like, yes, too much is too much, but like, then again, your phone is like, everything is on it.
Yeah.
But there's definitely, obviously, downsides to it, but there's definitely an addiction kind of side to it, I think.
And is that something you'd be aware of, Rosemary, as well?
Yeah, I feel like people maybe just don't realise the impact it has on like their health and their well-being as much as it actually does. Do you know, stuff they see mightn't always be true, and they don't realise that, I suppose, when they see it, do you know.
And would you have, Anna, you mentioned that you did like a media class in school. Would you have any sort of classes or conversations in school around safe phone use and what to do if you see something online that you don't like, or if someone upsets you online?
Yeah, like we have like CSVE or like SPHE, and that, but it's only like a class, you know, maybe reading out a book. And like, there is always talk about it, like, don't be on, like, our school is so, you're not allowed on your phone at all. So when they do talk about it, it's like, you know, it's kind of common sense almost. They're like, just don't. It is a lot of, they do talk a lot about safety, like, sometimes, but only like a class or two, and like, it's brought up now and then, but I wouldn't say it's like all the time we're talking about it.
And is that something you'd like to see a bit more education? And it's not to patronise, but just more the normalisation of the fact that things can and do go wrong online.
Yeah, I think it's something everybody needs to be informed on. Like, it's not just something so simple, because people think that, oh, if I just type this, no one's going to see it or won't be there for, but it is there. It's there forever. Like, and if like if you wouldn't say it's somewhere in real life, like, why would you just write it online, you know?
Mm. And Rosemary, what about you? Do you think that more could be done in terms of not just digital education as to like how to use the devices, but also that safety and well-being side?
Yeah, I think it should be something that is spoken about more within schools, and even for parents to be able to tell their children, like, well, that's not safe, and don't be doing stuff like that you don't want out there.
Mm.
Because I feel like it's not something that is spoken of very much and probably should be.
Mm. And so, like, obviously some schools now have the yonder pouches. That's something that's coming down the tracks. Do you have yonder pouches in your school, Anna?
No, we don't. Our school, in fairness, we are very, like, it's like you're not, you just, your phones are turned off in your locker or in your bag, powered off. And if you get caught on your phone, if it goes off in class, it's gone for the week. Now, it used to be more strict, but now it's gone for the week. You hand it in every day at 9 to the principal or the deputy principal, and you hand it in, and it's gone. Like, you get it back at the end of the day, and that's it.
And what about in your school? Do you use the yonder pouches, Rosemary?
No, we don't use the yonder pouches, but we do have a no phones policy.
Mm-hmm.
But I do think they have mentioned that they might introduce it in the next few years. Same as Anna, our phones do be taken off us if we're caught on them.
Mm.
I suppose for our own safety, maybe more so than for like the school, I don't know.
Yeah. And so do you guys have technology in the classrooms? Like, not your phones, but are you interacting with computers and tablets and all the rest? Because I think I left secondary school in 2007, which is obviously a long time ago. Some teachers had interactive whiteboards, but that was the extent of it. How much tech is in your classroom?
Like, the teacher would have a computer, and then we have projectors So they'd hook the computer up to the projector and that and display on the whiteboard. And then I never really used laptops in school. Like, we do have them in the school. They're like for everybody to use. You can bring them into the class. We don't really use them, but we have many computer rooms in our school. And, you know, we just go in, like, if we're doing projects or stuff. I think that kind of prevents us from using our phones and stuff. So,
yeah.
We use the computers just for research. But lots of sites are, like, you know, they're blocked. Mm. You're not allowed on them. It's really just, like, Google, and that's kind of it.
Mm. And what about in your school, Rosemary? Would you interact with technology much throughout the day?
Yeah, I suppose we have computer rooms. We do have a coding class and then goes to IT, then at leave and cert. So, or computer science, sorry. But as TYs, we do have an IT class and we're doing Word and PowerPoint, like the MOS program. So I suppose we do interact with it a good bit. But again, it is just computers. Like, there's no further.
And would you have any interest in doing the computer science for the leave and cert?
Yeah, I think it's interesting. Like, it's something I suppose you don't really generally think of until you're actually sitting in the class and learning about it. Yeah, I enjoy the coding class, the computer
and
science.
Is that something that you can do in your school, Anna?
I don't really know. I don't think we don't have an IT class, like, for leaving cert. I don't think we do anyways. In first year there was a computer class, and then in TY there's like also another computer class. I think it's just like filling time, could be, but like we just did PowerPoints and stuff, but I don't think we go further than that.
And so obviously this is your last few days here with us in News Talk. What's going to be your big takeaway from the TY Media Week?
Oh my God, everything. I just loved it. It was so much fun and it was so cool to see all the rooms and like use all the mics, and then getting to see like everybody do their jobs, you know, like you see, there's printing, like there's all the cool FIFA. And like also then meeting everybody, it was so fun, like making friends, because we had no idea who these people were and now we're all friends. So it's great.
That's lovely. And what about for you, Rosemary?
Honestly, just the experience of being able to say, I've been in News Talk, I've seen all the work that goes into the radio, and meeting all the presenters and seeing them live on air in the studios, like it's just such a cool experience to have, do you know? Yeah.
Well, you've been just such a pleasure to have throughout the week. So thank you all so much. And please do come back and visit us sometime.
Definitely.
Yeah.
Thanks so much.
Tech Talk with Jess Kelly.
Welcome back to the final part of this week's Tech Talk. As ever, if you have any questions for me, you can drop me an email to techtalk@newstalk.com. If you're looking for a recommendation, if you have a problem relating to technology, that is the email. And I'm going to jump into the inbox in just a quick minute and run through some of your questions. But before we do that, I want to bring you some recommendations of what I've been listening to and watching over the last wee while. First up is a fantastic podcast. It's called Steak Knife. Now, I listened to this podcast because I was a huge fan of the producer's original podcast, which was called Where is George Gibney? It is one of the most compelling and heartbreaking podcasts I have ever listened to. It's a story I didn't know much about at all, but it relates to a swim coach here in Ireland and the abuse he inflicted on young people. And the producers met with some of the survivors of George Gibney and tells their story. It's a hard listen, but it is a fantastic listen. And that's what got me onto Steak Knife, which is the second podcast from producer-presenter Mark Horgan. And it is a BBC Sounds production, but Mark is Irish, so there tends to be an Irish angle to the stories. And this one, so here's the blurb for this podcast.
In Northern Ireland, from the late 70s to the early 90s, the IRA killed over 40 alleged informers, men and women accused of passing information to the police and the British Army. But the man who often found, tortured and sometimes killed these people on behalf of the IRA was himself an informer, a secret British Army agent with the codename Steak Knife.
These were police agents identifying other agents.
Just how was one man allowed to lead a double life for so long?
It's not like James Bond. It's not a black and white situation.
When lies are still being told to this day, who do you believe?
I wouldn't even know where to start, and I'm with the IRA.
Steak Knife. Listen now on BBC Sounds.
Mark has done a fantastic job telling the story, meeting with journalists who reported on Stakeknife at the time, meeting people who were involved with Stakeknife from the IRA side of things. It's another part of Irish history that I just didn't know a whole host about. And I think this, again, it's pretty heavy going. It's not a Sunday morning cheery walk podcast. It's you're on your hands and knees scrubbing the floors, and it'll get you through. It's such an important listen, and I would highly recommend it. So Stakeknife is there. Another one that I've gone back to, another podcast I've gone back to, is Conan O'Brien Needs a Friend. I played you a clip a few weeks ago of Conan talking to his assistant, Sona, who lost her home in the LA fires. And that sort of conversation got me back into listening to Conan O'Brien Needs a Friend. I'd sort of walked away from it because I found, I don't know, it just wasn't floating my boat for a little while. But I listened to this week's episode with Jason Bateman, who himself has a podcast, as everyone does these days, Smartless. But the conversation between Conan and Jason Bateman was fascinating. It goes into the darker sides and the heavier sides of being a child actor, which Jason Bateman was. He talks about losing himself and a lot of his money in his 20s and how Arrested Development turned things around for him. That conversation led me to go back and revisit Arrested Development. It is so good. If you never watched it, please just put it on. It is a pure tonic. Utter nonsense, an incredible cast, proper laugh out loud moments from so many episodes. And so that's my sort of bingeable TV show at the moment. I also went back over last weekend, was last weekend when the weather was crap, and I rewatched Line of Duty on the RTE player and thoroughly enjoyed all of the seasons. Apparently it's making a comeback, which is very exciting. But if you have any TV recommendations for me, please do get in touch, techtalk@newstalk.com. And the reason I'm spending so much time in front of the telly at the moment is because I am reviewing the brand new Sky Glass 2.0. So this was unveiled last week, and from the spec sheet, it seems to have had a whole host of improvements and enhancements, you know, on the spec side of things. I was a little bit skeptical as to whether or not you'd notice a difference or if I'd notice a difference. We set it up at home on Thursday, and straight away the picture is much better than the original. Also, the sound quality is great. So on the original Sky Glass, when we had that as our TV in our sitting room, we had it going through, or we had the sound going through speakers just to give that sort of full immersive sound experience. When we set it up on Thursday, we copped instantly that that just wasn't needed. It's a much fuller sound. So I'm still getting used to it. I'm still playing around with it. I'm still going to watch all of the Harry Potters, obviously, and see and give you my full review over the coming days and weeks. But if you've anything, like, what's your go-to movie? What movie would look incredible on a new TV? I think Life of Pi is always a good one to test out. But if you have any specific recommendations of a film that just looks incredible, drop me an email to techtalk@newstalk.com. Right, I'm going to run through some of the questions. There's quite a few that came in this week. First one here is from Anya in Galway. And she says, I cancelled a subscription to a language learning platform called Lingopie in July 2023. They show films and videos in various languages with subtitles to help you learn a new language. However, I'm still being billed for it. In total, they have taken over €280, wow, from my bank account since my cancellation. My cancellation was successful, as I have an email confirmation from them. However, they took money from my account in October 23, February 24, October 24, and now again in February 25. I've sent them numerous emails asking them not to do this. They fobbed me off saying they are busy but will investigate. On 22nd December 24, they wrote to me to say they had reimbursed the amount they took from my account in October 24, 7381, but this is a lie because I've not received the money. If you go to Trustpilot for Lingopie and click on the one-star reviews of this company, you will see there are numerous people who have had a similar experience, although I don't know if they've had as much money taken as I have. What can I do? How can the company get away with such a blatant theft? Anya, this is hugely frustrating, and I've had similar experiences in the past where I signed up for a subscription, cancelled it, and then still the money came through. What I ended up doing was initially calling my bank and getting the bank to stop the direct debit. I know it's a pain in the face to have to call service providers, but get onto them and make them stop the money coming from your account in the first instance. Then I would email the company again and say that if they don't reimburse you, you're going to go down the legal route, because this is, if you have the confirmation, if you have an email from them saying they've refunded you and you didn't get the money back, you're absolutely within your rights to escalate things and hopefully get your money back. So I would firstly call the bank, secondly email them, outlining, as you've just done there, the amount of money taken. Ideally, if you could give the dates of the transactions alongside the amount of each transaction, and then, as I said, just say that you're going to consult legal advice, because that is just not right. What I now do as a result of my bad experience with subscriptions is I do it all through my Revolut, so I can block a subscription if they're still, if I get the notification, because Revolut is very good at saying, you know, upcoming payments, and if I've cancelled and if they attempt to take my money, I just block it. Absolutely point blank block it. And the other thing as well that's funny is by getting onto the bank and preventing them taking the money, they may then come looking for the money, at which point you'll get to speak to a human, because these companies are very good at taking our money, not so good at giving it back. So I hope that helps. Do let me know how you get on. Next up, we have an email here from Decky, who says, "Hi Jess, I'm looking for advice on the best Android watch that has fall alert, GPS and heart monitor. It's for my 92-year-old dad." So Decky, thanks so much for your email. The good news is that the wearables have definitely become more sophisticated in recent years. There are more options out there. They're also more affordable, which I think is a huge thing for so many people as well, because for such a long time, to get the, even the heart rate monitor, the ECG side of things, it was very, very expensive. That's now changed. As I said, it's a great thing. So you have the one that I would recommend would be the Samsung watch. Their flagship model has all of the features that you're looking for. It's very easy to set up. It's very easy to use. What I would suggest, though, is that you just make sure that it, just double check that it sort of sits on the wrist well for your dad, because the face of it is quite large. I found it quite large when I was doing my review. Obviously, I'm like, it's sometimes I feel these watches are more made for the male wrist than the female wrist. So you should be fine. But if you can go into a store and look at it, or even just look at it online and make sure that you're happy with it, that would be my suggestion. The final one for this week is Fintan, who says, "I'm out of contract with my mobile provider. Can you advise the best option for a new pay monthly contract? I don't need a new phone, just want to keep my number and pay less per month. I've also built a new home with triple glazed windows, look at you, and A1 insulation." Wow. "This has resulted in very poor mobile signal inside the home, a full signal when you go outside. Is there anything I can do to improve the indoor phone signal? Also, I have very poor Wi-Fi signal in my house. I have a signal booster, but not great when the doors are closed. Any advice on the best Wi-Fi options or signal boosters?" Okay, let's run through this. So, Ivra Hain, the contract, we had Dara Cassidy of bonkers.ie on the show 2 weeks ago, I want to say, and we ran through some of the best options out there. I'm a big fan of the digital mobile networks. So GOMO, Clear Mobile, 48, Virgin Media Mobile. Of those options, I would recommend GOMO, $14.99 a month. Great coverage, like really good service. Can't argue with it. In terms of the signal, the mobile signal inside your house, it's very difficult to enhance it. I have really bad phone signal inside my house and it drives me bananas. So what I do now is I've turned on Wi-Fi calling in my house. So that has improved things somewhat. It's still not perfect, but the Wi-Fi calling has helped. And then in terms of your Wi-Fi signal, what I'd suggest you do is, if you can, plug a LAN cable into the back of your modem and into a laptop and run a speed test. So if you just literally Google speed test and hit run the test, you'll get an idea of what speeds you're getting. And that will tell you if there's a good signal coming into the house. Because the issue is if you don't have a good signal coming into the house, then the Wi-Fi signal isn't going to be great. If you do have a good signal when you're plugged into the LAN cable, what you then would need is to either move your modem to a better part of the house, make sure it's not behind or beside any tech devices, try and have it in the heart of the home. Also, I always recommend a mesh system, a Wi-Fi mesh system, if you can. And I think that would enhance things. But the key thing is just to check the quality of the signal that's coming into the house directly to the router. Let me know if that helps, if you have any further questions. As ever, the email is techtalk@newstalk.com. Right, that is it from me this week. If you missed any of the show, you can listen back on the Newstalk app powered by Go Loud. I'll be back with Shane and Kira on Monday's Newstalk Breakfast. But in the meantime, have a great weekend.
Time for a quick break to talk about McDonald's. Here's an offer you don't want to miss. For just $3, treat yourself to a Krispy Kreme donut, like their irresistible chocolate donut with sprinkles, and in any size hot coffee or refreshing iced tea, just $3. Whether you're fueling up for the day or just taking a sweet break, this deal is for you. Price and participation may vary. Offer valid December 10th through April 30th, 2025 at participating McDonald's while supplies last. Krispy Kreme and associated trademarks used under license. Copyright 2024 KKDC, copyright 2024 McDonald's.